Hello, my name is Bob Bamber, and welcome to the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. We're jumping back in the time machine to June of 1994. I'm being joined by Colin Judkins.
Hello.
And Del Muir.
Hiya, Bob.
Colin, the news.
Right. Hulk Hogan made his WCW debut this month, being unveiled in a live press conference at Disney World on WCW Saturday night, before appearing in front of a live crowd at Clash of the Champions. The clash was held in Charleston, South Carolina, which is NWA Ric Flair country. It saw Hulk Hogan received a mixed reaction at best, with audible boos during Hogan's live promo in front of the crowd. After Ric Flair won the unification match against Sting, Hulk Hogan signed on Saturday night for a world title match at Bash of the Beach next month. The contract signing, held in a studio in Atlanta, was presided over by none other than Ted Turner himself.
As Colin says, Ric Flair defeated Sting in the unification match for WCW World and International Heavyweight titles in the main event of the Clash. The match started with Sensuous Sherry walking out decked out in Sting face paint. The move was actually a trick that would see her ultimately siding with Flair at the conclusion of the match. Sherry and Flair would then lead to beat down Sting 2-on-1 after the match before Hogan ran them off.
Over in WWF, Owen Hart became the 1994 King of the Ring, defeating Tatanka, the 1-2-3 Kid, and Razor Ramon to win the crown, but would require interference from the returning Jim the Anvil Neidhart, who would turn heel in the process during the final. Hart followed up on his victory with, by his standards, a very good promo during his coronation, and would declare himself the King of Hearts. The storyline that played itself out on Raw was that Jim Neidhart said that Bret was never grateful of him when they were a tag team, and that he didn't show him any respect. He said that he wanted Owen to win the title.
And speaking of Bret, Bret did retain the WWF title thanks again to interference from Jim the Anvil Neidhart. The story going into the match with Diesel was whether Bret would be able to kick out of the jackknife powerbomb. Diesel had previously laid out Hart on Raw a couple of weeks before with said move. After a long match, Diesel hit Hart with the powerbomb, but Neidhart interfered to cause the DQ. After the match, Neidhart ran off, leaving Hart to get a beatdown, by Diesel and Shawn Michaels.
Details have emerged about Hulk Hogan's WCW contract. It's believed that the WWF's match first option clause on the deal is likely why we got these details. Hulk Hogan's contract expires on December 31st of this year, but Hulk Hogan will be paid a massive $300,000 per show and 25% of any increase in pay-per-view revenues above the current average. It's also said he will receive a staggering 65% of merchandise revenues. Given that 30% of these merchandise revenues to WCW are already eaten up by expenses, it's massive, it's huge.
And back in WWF, the Undertaker character is back in television, but it's not actually the same person. Ted DiBiase unveiled the fake Taker on an episode of Superstars, characters played now by Brian Lee. Undertaker 2 is dressed and looks the same as the original, has the same mannerisms by and large, and even cut a promo with the real Undertaker's voice dubbed over. The move is a full support of Mark Calloway, who plays the real Taker, and it's believed the feud is building towards a match between the two.
WWF billed the King of the Ring pay-per-view as the start of the New Generation, a show that it should be remembered was headlined by Jerry Lawler and Roddy Piper. During the show, a video package aired comparing old and new, the idea being that old was slow and boring and the new was fast and exciting. In amongst the old part of the video was Hulk Hogan.
And lastly, the WWF is gearing up for what's potentially the biggest few weeks in its history, as the steroid trial is due to begin on the 5th of July. Titan Sports is accused of being in conspiracy with Dr. George Zahorian and others to get WWF wrestlers on steroids with the belief that it would help their business. We will have a full rundown of this in next month's show.
And that will conclude the news from this month. We will start with, we're going to break from tradition actually and start with the Clash of Champions rather than the King of the Ring pay-per-view. You'll kind of pick up one as we go along. Colin, the results.
Okay, Cactus Jack and Kevin Sullivan defeated the Nasty Boys to defend the tag team titles. The Guardian Angel defeated Tex Slazenger in a squash match. Stephen Regal defeated Larry Zbysko to become the new WCW World Television Champion. Johnny B. Badd defeated Steve Austin by disqualification. That should see Steve Austin retain the United States title. And Ric Flair defeated Sting to unify the WCW World Heavyweight Championship and the WCW International World Heavyweight Championship.
Noting a couple of things before we start. First of all, Lord Stephen Regal did actually win back his WCW TV title, having lost it a couple of weeks ago on WCW Saturday Night. We'll cover that bit in the TV reviews. Also, I'd say rather comedically, I guess it depends how serious you want to take this. If you were watching WCW main event on the Sunday before the Clash, you will have seen during the show a pre-taped segment which revealed all of the results from the show. Obviously, they worked out ahead of time what they were going to do because Clash was live, and they recorded the control center segment previewing Bash at the Beach, and then they sent the tape through to be shown at WCW main event before Clash of the Champions and inserted the wrong segment. So that wasn't very good. Sting basically passed it off as Ric Flair trying to play mind games, but yeah, it was all a bit embarrassing, really. That was that. Del, your overall thoughts on the Clash?
It's the first WCW show I've seen since probably late 91, and I was pretty impressed with it, to be honest. Overall, I thought the in-ring stuff was pretty solid. There was, going back to last month, thinking about the amount of ref bumps and everything that was on the pay-per-view, I was kind of expecting maybe a bit of dodgy booking. There was a couple of things here and there that was maybe a bit kind of hokey, but overall I was pretty impressed with it.
Colin?
I think it's about as good a 90 minutes of wrestling that I've seen from WCW in a long while. That said, it was WCW, so he was bound to get the odd screwy finish here and there. But overall, you can't really fault them too much.
No, I mean, I always come back to this when we do the Clash. I don't generally hold it to the same standards as I would a pay-per-view. It's a short show. It's a free TV show as opposed to people paying whatever to go and see it, to watch it on the TV. So, you know, I thought this was a very good show in terms of a TV show. The wrestling wasn't great up until the main event, but again, with TV stuff, I don't think you want necessarily the wrestling to be great. We will start with the opener, Cactus Jack and Kevin Sullivan defeating the Nasty Boys in 10 minutes to retain the WCW tag titles. Colin, we've seen these guys have wars, I almost want to say, in the last 4 or 5 months. I guess maybe having, if you've seen those matches, this might be a bit of a come down, but I thought this was a decent opener for a TV show, given that it was, we've got these guys who usually brawl all around the arena. This is very much stay in the ring. I thought they did about as well as they could.
No exaggeration. This was actually my favourite match of the night.
Okay.
In fact, like you said, Bob, you've got Cactus Jack, Kevin Sullivan and the Nasty Boys they've brawled around arenas using all kinds of weapons, and then WCW stick them in the opener of the Clash in a traditional tag team match. And I think they did really well trying to incorporate the two teams' style, and when I say style, the brawling, but trying to keep it legal. I thought they did quite well. I actually really enjoyed it.
Del?
I think the first thing that jumped out at me, Bob, just kind of referring back to me again, was the fact that there's actually having a match and the titles are up for stake was a refreshing start. With me coming into the match without really seeing a show since late 91. It was still pretty fresh to me, even though they've been kind of matching up in the last couple of months. It was pretty fresh. I just thought it was a pretty good solid opener. Kind of coming out the gates, going for the tag titles, getting the caliber of guys that you've got in it, that have got that chemistry already established. I don't think you could really go wrong with starting with the four of them.
No, I mean, again, TV show, you don't want to be giving away another walking brawl. That's the kind of thing, save that for the pay-per-view, although I don't think you can necessarily do any more, given they've done three of them already. But a fine opener, and given the four guys involved, I thought this was about as good as it's going to get. Not tons to report. There was one point where Cactus Jack knocked Brian Knobbs over the top rope, and the crowd popped quite big for that. And then as Knobbs is on the outside, Cactus Jack does a jump to the outside, backs into the guardrail because Knobbs gets out of the way. We've had that thing before about Cactus Jack taking these like really sickening thuds to the outside, and this is another one I can add to that. Great line in amongst all this where Bobby Heenan says, "Can we get someone out to come and check on the guardrail?" Which I thought was quite funny. And then it did eventually break down to all four guys brawling on the outside, and then we got back in the ring, and Cactus Jack DDT Brian Knobbs and got the win. I thought, fine, well, over.
A couple of things that didn't really makes sense to me. You had Sullivan's brother on the outside who had the injured leg. He did hit one of the guys with his crutch, which I'm pretty sure the referee did see.
Lest we forget, Colin, these guys are so unorthodox. They've actually put two referees.
Yes,
so
yeah,
it's actually two referees. Two that missed that interference.
Two referees that missed the crutches. Yeah, that's right. I completely forgot about the other referee, which apparently so did the booker.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all a meld in my mind. Anything more on this, Dale, quickly?
Nah, pretty much that's it. I mean, I think we've covered it there.
Okay. Mean Gene Okerlund did a plug for the hotline, introduced Sting, which got a big pop. Sting addressed, as I said, addressed the snafu with showing the results ahead of time. Said mind games wouldn't work on him. Weird, because if you hadn't watched Main Event, it was like, well, what mind games? But anyway.
Well, that's just it. I hadn't watched Main Event, so I sat there and watched that promo, and I was thinking that was complete gibberish.
Because the problem is you can't address that. You can't have Tony Schiavone, like, later in the show going, well, yeah, because, you know, we ran the results 4 days earlier. Yeah. That's what Sting was referring to. So, I guess, it was a horrible situation to be in. Like, don't do it again, and I'll let him off in the sense that that's about as good as it'll get. Some people are confused, some aren't, but, yeah, I don't think there's any other way you can address it. We got a video montage of the boss converting to the guardian angel. Colin, as maybe it's stereotyping differently, given the boss was kind of like dressed as a policeman, and policemen are quite fat. But they've repackaged the boss, Big Boss Man, as the guardian angel, wearing a funny kind of beret with some badges on it, and a shirt that's about three sizes too small.
I was laughing throughout the whole of that video, if I'm honest. You obviously had Nick Bockwinkel take away his, basically, the Big Boss Man's law and order away from
him. Oh, he took away the nightstick, the handcuffs, and just the gimmick, basically.
Basically telling him you're not a cop anymore. So now the Big Boss Man's gone from being a cop to being a vigilante. Which is essentially still the law, from what I can work out.
Yeah, I mean, just for those who don't remember this from, I think it was April, basically WWF kind of said, hang on, you're just nicking our character here. And so they lent on them legally, and WCW went, we don't want anything to do with this. So they had a storyline where the boss at the time kind of went a bit nuts after a match with Vader, and Nick Bockwinkel stripped him of his gimmick, essentially. And so this is him being repackaged, refound. The Guardian Angel, I'm not in love with the idea.
It's a bit of a strange one to me, Bob, to be honest. Even just coming in fresh, it's still pretty straightforward what's happened just with the vignette that ran prior to the match, but it's a strange setup overall, I think. I mean, something that did kind of pop into my head at the time is if you did actually call him the boss or the Big Boss Man, if it did encroach on slander, would he turn back into a police officer to arrest himself?
That would be a storyline that I think even WCW wouldn't be capable of pulling off. I'm sure they'd try.
So interesting was the match. That was my thought process during it.
Well,
I think my thought process, I'm sure I noticed Bobby Heenan call him Boss Man at one point.
That wouldn't surprise me. I'll be honest, I didn't have 3 minutes scheduled for that bit. but anyway, the match itself, the Guardian Angel versus Tex Slazenger. Surprisingly, even for the first, I don't know how long, it was only a couple of minutes anyway, the first couple of minutes of the match.
Yeah, I think the first 40 seconds was pretty
open. And then basically the idea was, as Connor, I think you said, he is still representing Law and Order, just not officially now. And the gimmick is three strikes. So, Tex actually punched him and he kind of no-sold it, threw up one finger. And then he hit him again and he threw up two fingers. Hit him a third time and he no-sold it again, threw up three fingers. Then basically Hulk up,
yeah.
Beat him about a bit, hit a sidewalk slam and got a pin.
Do you think Hulk Hogan got annoyed? You know, it's his debut night.
And someone else is stealing his gimmick.
Basically, the Boss Man just hulked up.
Yeah.
Essentially what it was.
No?
Couldn't agree more. I just thought there wasn't much to it. To be honest, there was more entertainment in the vignette, which was somewhat unentertaining as it was, to be honest.
Yeah, again, I didn't have that long plan on the Guardian Angel. We'll move on. Hulk Hogan's motorcade rocked up. Colin, this looked pretty cool. Maybe they faked this, maybe they took film from something else. There was an OJ Simpson reference from Bobby Heenan, which, given that I'm not really following that story, I'm not sure whether that was inappropriate or not. And yeah, so they basically cut to a shot of outside the arena and had this massive motorcade of, I don't know, four or five police cars, a load of motorbikes as well. In the middle of this was Hulk Hogan and Jimmy Hart, in theory at least, in a limo. They rocked up to inside the arena. Mean Gene Okerlund was there. Jimmy Hart was booed. Hogan got a mixed reaction. Colin, I think, is that fair to say?
A mixed reaction is fair, yeah. I mean, there were some cheers, but you could definitely hear boos. He's WWF. He just walked onto WCW TV.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of what I spoke about a few months ago. Are they going to reject him? I mean, again, as we said in the news, Flair, NWA country, it's not... Well, we'll come to this when it happens, but I'm not giving up on it by any stretch.
No.
Del, in terms of the way they presented this, big deal.
I think they're definitely trying their best, Bob. I mean, looking at the full setup with Disney World, looking at just the reactions of everybody and the build up that they're giving it, they know people know who he is, but they're not being afraid to sponge off that. They want people to know, listen, we've made a big move here and you're on board with, and we're going to do everything that we can to make sure that you're on board with. So fair play to them.
No, I mean, I won't cover it all now. When we get to the TV review stuff, I will illustrate how big a deal they've tried to make this. We cut back to the arena, and we have Lord Steven Regal versus Larry Zbysko. Colin, before this match even got started, Regal comes out in a judge's wig and an authentic clothes. Jesse Ventura jumps in on commentary at this point, and maybe he just went, I'm not saying this. Regal comes out dressed in a judge's wig and authentic clothes, quote unquote, worn by Lord Rupert Regal, Regal's great, great, great uncle. And apparently, Rupert caught the silver dollar that George Washington threw. Dale, I've no idea.
I was just going to leave this to you two. I just figured it was an English thing.
It was awful.
We got to the match itself, Regal mouth off to the crowd. Colin, what do you think of this match? I mean, Larry Zbysko did quite well, and that shows some nice intensity. There was one point where Regal kicked out of a pile driver, which was kind of one of the big parts of the match early on. We fell into a rest hold, and then Sir William helped Regal reverse, like kind of flip over a pin. Regal then grabbed onto the rope and got the three count and won back his title. It was fine.
Yeah, it was decent enough. I mean, I don't know how much you really can expect out of Larry Zbysko these days. So, yeah, I would guess it was down to Regal to help him along. And I would have bet money on it having something to do with Sir William at the end to help him win back the title.
Del?
I must admit, I was pretty impressed with it. Again, it's kind of following on from Cactus and Kevin Sullivan and the Nasty Boys. It's another one that's been ongoing in the last few weeks and months, but again, to me, it was still pretty fresh, so I really enjoyed that. The most frightening thing for me, and I mean it in a good way, was you've got Larry the Lip Zbysko in there, who's pretty much been a heel for God knows how many years now. And you've got Regal in there, who must be 25, 26 at this point, given an absolute masterclass on being a heel in a wrestling ring, which I was just really, really taken aback with the full character he's built up with himself, the heat he's building up with the crowd, the in-ring work. I just thought it was an absolute masterclass from such a young guy. Pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah, I'm impressed with Regal stuff. It's just a bit samey, and it's kind of just a bit mid-card, and I'd like to see something a bit more beefy. That will probably where I'm at with that. We go to a Mean Gene Oakland promo. He promos Bash at the Beach, then introduces Dustin Rhodes and Arn Anderson. Basically, yeah, Arn Anderson, cause Dustin, I'll backpedal a bit. Dustin Rhodes challenged, Terry Funk and Bunkhouse Buck to a tag match on the pay-per-view coming up next month, and said, I want Arn Anderson in my corner. And Anderson basically said, I'm gonna go back to the old Arn Anderson, the one that would start a brawl rather than run away from it. I think he said, I'm not going to be the politically correct one. I will smack my granny in the mouth, to start a brawl. So, I mean, anyway.
For 50 cents, no less, Bob.
That's the right. I can't remember notes. So yeah, we got that. That's right. And then Dustin Rhodes cut, I thought, quite a decent promo. Ended it by saying, this was my war and now it's our war. So we'll come on to that one next month. Then we got Johnny B. Badd versus Stunning Steve Austin. Colin, first thing to note was that Stunning Steve Austin doesn't have Colonel Robert Parker anymore.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one. I mean, Steve Austin doesn't really cut too many promos. From what I've been told, he's pretty decent as far as promos go, but they've never seemed to give him the mic, and that's why they had Colonel Parker along with him. But they seem to have taken Parker away from him, so...
I wonder whether it's more a move for Parker rather than for Austin, in the sense that Parker's kind of been shutting over with Terry Funk and Bunkhouse Buck, and they just don't want to dilute him over two or three different guys if they've got no and men. If they've got no intention of kind of putting them together, it's like, well, let's just keep them apart. Maybe.
It's possible. It's possible.
Del, your thoughts on this match?
Pretty basic stuff, to be honest. Looking back, as I said at the start, this is the first WCW show I've seen in a couple of years now. Looking back to when I was last seeing it, you've seen Johnny B. Badd, you've seen Stunning Steve. They were kind of pretty young, mid-card. You think there's a lot of potential there, more so obviously Stunning Steve than Johnny B. Badd, but we're, what, 2-3 years on the line here, still kind of meandering in the same place, which was a bit worrying. I mean, Steve Austin's went from, I believe, the TV title, and the last time I was seeing it, it's the late 91, we're here nearly 3 years later, and he's sitting with the US title, so that was a bit of a worry, considering that there doesn't seem to have been much progression there, but as you say, with the Colonel Parker progress, is it a case where they're maybe thinking of kind of letting him branch out on his own, see what he can do? Or is it a case where we could look at this in another 3 years' time and they're still in the same place? We'll just need to see where that one goes.
Colin?
It was pretty standard. I'm not a big Johnny B. Badd fan. Looks far too much like Little Richard for my liking. I think the ending of the match, it was so confusing.
Yeah, I'll fill in the bits in the middle and we'll get to the end in a sec. I mean, my thoughts on the match itself, they've had matches before. I thought this was their best. Not to say it was great by any stretch. There were some nice little exchanges. There was a drop kick into a flying shoulder tackle from the top rope. Then we had a flying head scissors into a DDT, into a back trolley drop. That was also nice. Johnny Badd reversed a superplex from Austin, but then went for a flying sunset flip, which he does very well, and missed it. And then we got to the finish, which was Austin went to the corner or something, grabbed some brass knuckles, hit Johnny B. Badd, and then this was kind of the giveaway of what was going to come next. Rather than tuck the brass knuckles either back into his trunks or into his trunks, tuck them under his arm, which is probably not the place I'd put them. So he got the pin, wins the match, Austin's celebrating, and then this is where it gets really confusing. Number two ref comes out and says, I saw that, I saw what happened, and my first thought, and I said this before, you've got referees reversing decisions, what about all the other crap decisions we've had in the last 12 months in WCW? But anyway. So the ref comes out and says, no, he saw that. And then I think Johnny B. Badd rolls him up, and the second ref just does a really quick three count, and Johnny B. Badd is the new United States champion, or at least he was. In theory, the show went off the air. Not the biggest babyface thing to do, to sneak up and then get a quick three count, particularly with a ref, although I guess if he got nailed by brass knucks, you could perhaps explain it. But as it turns out, we get to Saturday night, and kind of as a back mention, they said that they reversed the decision. Yeah, Colin, this was just all weird.
Yeah, I was sitting there watching the ending, trying, and I watched it a couple of times, I watched it back, I tried to make sense of it. Obviously, you had Austin. You knew as soon as he put the brass knucks underneath his armpit, you knew that something was screw was going to happen there. I actually thought the referee was going to raise that arm. That was my first instinct.
That would have been better.
Which would have made sense.
Yeah, that's a better idea than what they actually did.
But then the second referee came out, and then Johnny P. Badd rolled him up, and then they actually counted the three, and he walked off with the belt. And I was scratching my head. I thought. I don't know. They were saying that he was the champion, but then Jesse Ventura was confused as well, saying, is he actually the champion? And then he was, oh, I don't. To get to Saturday night.
And we just go to the adverts. We'll be back after this. Give you a bit of clarity. Yeah.
And they never followed up on it. That's like, I don't know. That's a great way of saying, yeah, you know what, US title doesn't really matter.
Yeah, pretty much.
Del?
Kind of do I say much more than that, to be honest, Bob.
Okay, we will move on to Hulk Hogan's promo. He was out on the ramp with Mean Gene Oakland. There were some boos, as there were throughout the promo. Del, my first thought, this amazing rip-off Real American theme. That was great.
I thought it was genius. And I believe, as far as I hear anyway, I think it's Jimmy Hart's masterwork.
Oh, I almost assume it was. It's called American Made, and yeah, it's... The actual sound is a little bit different, to quote Basil Foley.
The closest that I noticed is there's quite a lot of guitar riff, I believe, is the same.
Oh, yeah, I was going to come to that. To quote Basil Foley, it was British references.
Lyric sheet to Real American changed words.
But as Basil Foley would say, it was a semitone higher, which is a funny reference from Fawlty Towers about 15 years ago.
There you go.
But yeah, as you said, the guitar riff is almost identical. And it's called American Made rather than Real American.
Real American.
And you'll have heard that at the start of the show, when we had the entrance music. Colin, I guess if they're trying to repackage him, this is the best solution. Just package something that sounds the same. He's the American hero in WWF, in WCW rather than WWF, so you might as well pick some similar music. It sounds different enough where it's not a complete rip-off, but it's close enough where it's a similar kind of tune. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I guess that explains it.
If you was a wrestling fan that dropped in and out of regular viewing, and you went round to your friend's house and they turned on the TV and there was Hulk Hogan on a ramp being interviewed by Mean Gene, you would just assumed you were watching WWF. And it was all very similar. I did laugh when Hogan said that this was the biggest moment of his life.
Yeah.
Debuting in Charleston for WCW on Clash of the Champions on free TV. Brilliant.
It wasn't the only startling thing he said. I mean, it was quite a long promo, but the bullet points I've got written down. He called Sting and Flair two of the greatest wrestlers of the 90s, which I thought was great given that most of Flair's best work was in the 80s. And he obviously, yeah.
We're only in 1994.
Yeah, read between the lines on that, on the Sting and Ric Flair being two of the greatest wrestlers of the 90s. Also there. He also said he had to clean up his legacy, which given that we've got a steroid trial next month. Yeah.
He's a businessman.
Yes, something like that. So anyway, like that was kind of part of his promo. Flair interrupted him. They had a video wall, like a la WWF. Flair cut a really big impassioned promo. And then Hogan cut one back. It was a little bit wooden because Hogan started getting booed a bit more loudly by this point. I don't know whether it threw him off his game a bit. But yeah, basically they left no, well, not that they'd really left any kind of doubts on your minds anyway. They left no kind of stone unturned in terms of we're going to get Hogan and Flair. Like that was it. That's what they're building to. Del, what do you think of this segment? And effectively, Hogan's first major promo. He'd been on Saturday Night a few times, but in terms of a live promo.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think it was pretty revealing, actually. When you look at everything else that we've seen in Hulk Hogan come back last few months, even when they've been kind of teasing it, whenever I thought it was coming, everything has been so controlled and everything has been so well produced. Seeing him out live for the first time and you're doing it in the Carolinas, I think they took a pretty big chance. And while they've got away with it to an extent, I think there's certainly some chinks in the armour. Whether that is, as I say, just a case of where they are at that moment in time, we'll need to see in the next couple of months. But at least he's there. At least he's out. He's got his £300,000. So.
Yeah, and Colin, there were boos and they were noticeable, but they weren't major, I wouldn't
say.
Yeah,
I mean, he wasn't booed out of the arena, which is probably one of the only plus points that you can take out of it. WCW have spent this much money on Hulk Hogan, and there's no doubt they've spent this much money on him because he is the biggest name in professional wrestling. He is known in wrestling, and he's known worldwide. Everybody knows who Hulk Hogan is, and WCW have bought that brand. That's why they're paying so much for him. But I just don't understand why you would debut him in the Carolinas. If you're going to build him to a match against Ric Flair, debut him in Florida. That's, you know, somewhere where Ric Flair is not God. I don't know. It baffles me. And again, if he's just got $300,000 for talking to Mean Gene and running in to save Sting at the end of the night.
That's good. Well, you can get it.
More power to him.
We also had a very quick segment pre-tape with Shaquille O'Neal, the basketball player, in Hulk Hogan gear. Stood next to Hulk Hogan in Hulk Hogan gear. Hogan looked tiny. I don't think this was the best visual. I know Shaquille's a big name, but yeah, like Shaquille stood next to him. Hogan looked very small. So Shaquille talked about the bash, and then we moved on to the main event: Ric Flair versus Sting for the unification of the formerly NWA, now WCW International Heavyweight Title, and the World Heavyweight Title unification match. Michael Buffer said that Ric Flair was from Charlotte, South Carolina, was the wrong half, but for what that's worth. The story going into this match was basically, was Flair too distracted about Hogan to get the job done? And then just as this match is about to start, out walks out Sensuous Sherry. Now, backpedal a bit here. Sensuous Sherry was obviously Sensational Sherry. She was with Shane Douglas in ECW, joined WCW. And the story they've been building for weeks and weeks and weeks is she's going to find, quote-unquote, her man, but essentially someone to manage. At a segment on WCW Saturday Night where she came out during a Brian Pillman match. Obviously, that didn't lead anywhere. And then she comes out. She's walking out. She's kind of dressed in black, but that's no different for her, black hair, and she's holding a kind of a small mask kind of obscuring her face. Then she walks down the ramp, she gets right next to the ring, she pulls away the mask, and she is decked out in Sting face paint. That was the story going into the match. So yeah, it was a match that took a little bit while to get going. You know, it was kind of Sting being a bit freaked out by having, you know, Sensuous Sherry choose her. Flair telling the story that is his mind a bit warped, and they did a good job on commentary telling that as well. Flair a couple of times kind of walked up the rank just to kind of calm himself down. And more of the same really. Flair at one point kind of went off at the crowd, and yeah, and as Colin said in the Carolinas, it's not like Flair was being cheered, although I guess it helped that he was against Sting. At one point Flair shoved the ref shoved him straight back, which I thought was quite cool, for what that's worth. And have we got more notes here? That's right. There's an amazing moment here. Flair gets dumped to the outside, by Sting. Heenan was doing a great job during this match. So they go back into the ring. There's superplex. Sting goes for a splash and misses. Flair rolls to the outside. Sting goes for a flying crossbody over the top rope to the outside. Flair pushes Sensuous Sherry into the line of fire. Now, obviously, we don't know it yet, but they're cohorting. Sensuous Sherry takes a world-class bump. Now, okay, she ends up doing in the post-match beatdowns and splashes, so it's not like she's immobile or anything like that. Perfectly able, but took a million-dollar bump here. Sting, like Flair, pushed her into the line of fire. Sting flattened her. Perfect. And she was seemingly unharmed. So basically they got back in the ring, and obviously Sting was a bit distracted by kind of what happened. Flair just got him, rolled him up, grabbed the tights, and won the match. And after the match, Sherry, who I thought, my one criticism of her in this entire thing was I thought she got up a bit quickly, but I guess that's kind of par for the course given the time constraints they had, got back into the ring and sided with Flair. Flair used the surprise on Sting to start beating him up. Sherry joined in. Hogan ran out, ran off Flair. Hogan then squared to go and hit Sherry, which we'll come to. And then Flair grabbed Sherry. They ran off, and that ended the show. Colin, that's a ton of stuff there. Start with, we'll come to the ending, the Sherry bump and the post-match afterwards, but your thoughts on the match itself, Colin?
I guess you could say it's standard Flair Sting, really. I mean, we've seen him wrestle a few times now. They don't really have that bad a match whenever I've seen it. So putting them two together in a main event of a clash is a pretty solid thing to do. The match was entertaining. I enjoyed it.
No.
Pretty much agree with the standard, Bob. I mean, it's two pros that know what they're doing. They've fought enough over the last few years, you know what they're doing. The only thing it was a wee bit, I didn't quite like it anyway, was the focus seemed to be more Flair Hogan than Flair Sting, with the background story with the commentators and even just Flair selling. It was more, Sting was just an afterthought, Hogan's the main focus in Flair's head. And even just the silly wee things were coming out with the build is gold, but certainly looked yellow to the eye, the yellow trunks. It seemed as if it was just, this is the prelude to Flair Hogan, as opposed to it being the actual main event of Flair's thing. But as I say, apart from that, the action was solid. Can't really fault it.
No, I mean, we've had the thing with, like, they've been building Flair and Hogan for months, and we had the thing with Steamboat where Flair was doing interviews and being asked six questions, and five of them were about Hogan, yeah, and then the one on the end was about Steamboat. So that's kind of nothing new. Dale, your thoughts on kind of the last kind of 2 minutes of the match with the Sherry bump and the finish?
Two words, that bump. It was just, it was a thing of beauty. And I mean, anybody that's obviously followed Sherry, whether it's in WCW, WWF, she's not afraid to get down and dirty. But that was just, that was lovely looking, that bump. The way that it had been planned out, the way that it was executed, even just as soon as the camera panned in and you see the permed hair against the guardrail, it's like, wow, you kind of forget for a minute what you're watching, and it was just, that was great to look at. And a model pro, as I say, the only thing, maybe a wee slight tinge of it coming to the end of the programme was the kind of, the timing, getting up and then back into the ring and then being able to put a beat down on Sting. But as I say, I can't really fault her performance there. The full ending, as you say yourself, we knew it was building to it. We knew it was coming at the end with Flair and Hogan. It was just a case of how we got there. So we kind of went round the houses a bit with Sherry siding with Sting, then turning, then the beat down. But as I say, it was all about the bump for me.
Yeah, I mean, Colin, to come to this bump, I mean, I nearly jumped out of my chair when that happened. It was a perfect pitch note bump. Sting didn't, like, land on his feet. Well, he kind of did. But Sting didn't, like, it wasn't a crossbody to the outside designed to protect her in the sense that I'm going to land on my feet and then kind of fall on top of you. She just took this bump and she, like, seemed to hit her head pretty hard on either the floor or the guardrail. I mean, it was phenomenal.
She is one tough lady. Brilliant. Let's say, you guys have said, you could not ask any more of her at that point. I mean, it was It was near perfect. It was about as perfect a bump as you would see anybody take in that situation, let alone a man on a woman. Sherry's fantastic. I loved her in WWF. I'd not seen any of her in ECW. So
she was great there as well. I mean, not that Shane Douglas especially needed a mouthpiece. He's doing great promos himself. But she's been great there. And yeah, I mean, this was as good a start as you could have asked for, I think.
Yeah. I mean, and then you had the ending. She turned on Sting, and the one bit I didn't really understand was Sting seemed like surprised and was asking her what was going on. He didn't know she was going to be there. Unless they'd seen each other before the match and he knew what was going on, but I suppose you could put that spin on it, but he didn't know she was going to be there. So
what,
why
wasn't the surprise that she turned on him, having, what, wasn't that the surprise? Like the baby face not expecting the woman that comes out dressed as him to then turn on him, wasn't that the, or do you mean at the start of the match?
Well, I don't get why he was surprised or disappointed that she'd done what she'd done when he didn't even know she was going to be there in the first place. Maybe he was disappointed that he was trying to help her after the bump.
Yeah, there was that.
That's the real spin I suppose you could try and put on it as well, but I don't know. He knows who Sherry is. Surely he knows her reputation. He can't be that surprised.
Well, obviously he doesn't get whatever channel ECW's on. Now, we'll come to the bit post-match. So Sherry, as I say, like, my one critique of the entire bit was having taken a bump that really probably should have seen her do a stretcher job, because even if she is athletic, she is a valet. That's the kind of bump that really should have been her night over. Obviously, it didn't really fit in with what they were trying to tell. So she kind of came round fairly quickly, and then basically Flair starts beating her down. She does a couple of like splashes from the top rope, which was pretty severe. Hogan comes out. Flair scarpers. Hogan sees that Sting's okay, and I think Jimmy Hart comes out as well. And then Hogan turns his attention to Sherry, and he cocks his fist. I don't know whose idea this was. I don't know how planned this was. I don't know whether Hogan just got lost in the moment and forgot where he was. But men and women violence I'm not keen on anyway, but baby faces shouldn't be shaping up to hit women, regardless of the circumstances, regardless of what happened. But on national television, with this kind of audience, baby faces, particularly Hulk Hogan, should not be shaping to hit women.
I think that's the way I took it, Bob, is when he came out, it's his first live show. It's the new company. He knows where it's going. It's him and Flair. How quickly, as yet, we don't know. I think he wanted to make an impression, and it certainly went sour pretty quick, I think. But I think it was more a case of a lack of planning and a caught-in-the-moment situation. In hindsight, I think he'd probably agree with us. But, as I say, it was certainly not pretty to watch.
Colin?
When I saw Hogan ball his hand up into a fist, I did the, whoa. Is he really going to hit a woman on his first night in WCW?
Unless this was the heel turn. Like, unless that was it. I mean, I don't know. But Hogan didn't, and she slapped him, and so that was that. And then I think we got a Hogan promo at the end of the show. In not so many words, essentially challenging Flair to the Bash at the Beach, and we'll come to the WCW TV review in a minute. Dell, your overall quick thoughts on this show and a score rating out of 10.
What I've gave the show on the whole was 6, Bob. 6 out of 10. The matches that stood out to me were the main event, first. It was just nice to see this match when I hadn't seen it in a couple of years. I thought they were still two model pros. The bump for Sherry, the bump even going back to the first match for Cactus, that springboard onto the concrete. I just thought there was some pretty decent action in it. There wasn't really anything that you could pick out, maybe with the exception of the Guardian Angel squash, that you could really say was anything less than a solid standard. There was a couple of matches individually I would maybe marked about 7. The main event, as I say, the first time we see Regal Zabisco was a standout for me. But overall, as I say, you couldn't really say it was bad. You couldn't really say it was excellent. I just thought it was a really decent, solid show. So I'd given it 6 overall.
Colin?
Yeah, I had it as a bit better than average. I gave it 7. I said earlier on my favourite match was the tag match at the start of the night, just because I found it interesting seeing the two brawling teams trying to put on a standard tag team match. But then you couple that with the main event and even the Steven Regal to the and Zabisco match to a point as well. It was a decent show. So, yeah, I gave it a 7.
I gave it 7.5. I don't know what really, ton about more you can really ask from a TV show. The opener was good. There was some decent action in the middle. Main event was decent. There are a few things that I had qualms with. It probably knocked a half a point or a point off, certainly with the Hogan stuff and things like that. But it felt like a major show, and it was a newsworthy show. I think that's probably the bigger thing here, is that you might not really, kind of in a year's time, remember the individual match. In fact, you probably won't. But you'll remember the Hogan promo, and you'll remember the last 5 minutes of the show. And so I think more a case of it was newsworthy rather than the interaction was any good, but it is a TV show. Anyway, we will have our WCW TV review. Arn Anderson on the first episode of the month basically fueled speculation of the return of the Four Horsemen, said that Flair had been speaking to him about it, and he rejected the invitation to join Colonel Robert Parker's stud stable. Lord Steven Regal lost his WCW television title on WCW Saturday night to Larry Zbysko, bizarrely given Regal's run of tournament draws recently. The change took place over two shows, the ending cut off at the end the last show in May and running into the first show in June. Fantastic life from Bobby Heenan at one point, who asked Tony Schiavone, what was the timing on this match? I've got things to do. On the 4th of June show, they announced officially the Hulk Hogan signing to WCW. They had a kind of ticker tape banner running along the bottom of every segment with this rather annoying beeps. They did call Hogan the former 5-time WWF champion. The 11th of June show was exclusively built around Hogan's debut with the company. They set up a live press conference at Disney World. The rest of the show was taped, but they had a live press conference kind of in this set in Disney World, which was like a street complex almost. Filled with fans, Hogan was sat on top of a red and yellow convertible and then proceeded to have a largely fluff press conference with pre-approved and softball questions to answer. Hogan asked a lot of stuff about Flair and a lot of the same things again. And on the 25th edition of WCW Saturday Night, firstly we had the Guardian Angel laying the foundations for a feud with Vader, and those who saw his match with Vader at Spring Stampede, I'm more than in favour of that. We also, this is kind of going to be a quick discussion point, is we had a contract signing, Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair at a TV studio in Atlanta, Georgia. This wasn't a groundbreaking segment in terms of what was said. Like, if you imagine a Hogan Flair press conference / kind of contract signing, you got by and large what you'd expect. Mejio confronted it. But we did have the presence of Ted Turner, which I think massively jacked up the significance of it. At the one point, the one line I wrote down from Flair was where Flair said, "Greatness only passes by once in a lifetime, and you're looking at him." Del, let's just quickly on the contract signing itself. What do you think in terms of, and just more kind of the wider picture of the build to this match next month? Maybe not a score rating, but in terms of how well WCW could have done with this, how well have they done in terms of building this match?
I think even going back to what I said earlier, Bob, I think they've threw absolutely everything at this. They know that it's a big name they're bringing in. They know that obviously it's a hell of a lot of money that they're pumping into it as well. They know that they've got the opportunity to make a name for themselves, and I don't think they've cut one corner so far, whether it's taking it Disneyland, setting up press conferences, even getting Turner out there. They want to make the appearance that this is as big as they are making it out to be. And to be honest, so far I can't fault them.
Colin?
Well, they had billionaire Ted in the room, so they're obviously trying to put it across that it is as big as it sounds. I mean, Ric Flair versus Hulk Hogan on paper is one of the biggest matches in professional wrestling. That, you know, it should have main evented WrestleMania 8. WWF completely dropped the ball on that one. It does feel like a big match, and it's like Dale says, they've really pulled out all the stops to let people know that they've got Hulk Hogan. This is a big deal. I mean, he is the biggest name in wrestling, and he is a WCW wrestler, and they're shelling out all this money, and they want everybody to know that he is there, because otherwise it's a lot of money for nothing.
No,
going back to what you said there, Colin, sorry, Bob, do you think that's a big part of the plan, is that they think they can maybe, to an extent, get a one-up on WWF with getting that main event that never was at WrestleMania 8? Do you think that's a big part of it, is they can't give you this, we can, here it is?
Well, I still don't understand why WWF didn't do it. WCW know that Hulk Hogan has the reputation as the WWF's face. He's the face of the WWF. Five-time former champion. His name value alone should take some of the WWF viewers to watch WCW.
Mm-hmm.
So spending this amount of money, they need those viewers to make that channel change.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Bash of the Beast isn't next week, so there is more of this build to come. So obviously we can have a better idea of that when we review it on next month's show. But I think they've done pretty much all they can. You know, I kind of said a few months ago, they've got to make the effort of selling Hogan as the biggest name in wrestling. I think by and large they've done that. They called him the 5-time WWF champion. They've called it, you know, the greatest, the biggest moment in wrestling history. They've called it, you know, him the greatest wrestler, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think that hype machine hasn't failed, certainly not yet. Well, other than the bit on Main Event. Time will tell in terms of where this ends up going, and obviously we've got in the next few weeks. Dale, does he win the title? I think he has to, doesn't he? Anything short of that, given the money you're paying him, I think is silly.
I think that the build-up that it's got, the kind of, the power of the machine that they're putting behind him, I think it would certainly take a lot for them to come back for that, even in true WCW style. If it was a bit of a hokey finish, which they just cannot afford to do, I think they've got to get behind their new man. As I said, they're giving their own fans the match that they want to see. They're also giving the competition up north the match that they wanted to see, albeit 2 years ago. They want to make this a big deal, and I think they've got to stick behind their new man. And I think Flair will be all behind that behind the scenes as well.
Colin, Hogan win?
I can't see any other outcome. I mean, they cannot build him the way they've built him and not put the title on him. Unless they can see some really big money in maybe Flair, has, unlike WCW, getting a bit of a screwy finish and winning. And they see money in Hogan chasing him again, but I can't see it. I really can't. The money for them is Hogan being the champion. Him walking around with their belt is the image that they want.
Absolutely. I can't disagree with that. I mean, it is WCW. If anyone can find a way to get this wrong, we're going to find out in the next few weeks. But I think they'll see sense. Moving on to Eastern Championship Wrestling. The TV review. A good month of TV, but nothing kind of groundbreaking news-wise. As part of ECW's agreement with WCW surrounding Slamboree, Cactus Jack kind of came over for a set of tapings. The build was on television was for a match between Cactus Jack and Sabu at a live event. Sabu's manager, Paulie Dangerously, said on air that WCW didn't want the match themselves because they knew Sabu could win. I have to say, and this will probably end up being my moment of the month, there's a promo by Paulie Dangerously. I think it's on the 21st of June edition of ECW. You can find it out. Phenomenal build. I won't quote him verbatim because I can't really do the job he can, but it's a great Paulie Dangerously promo for a start. And he essentially says, you know, kind of two things, but the line he ends with, which I just thought was great, was where he said, you know, he said, and what I quite like is he kind of fronts up and he said, There may well be another match, but there will never be another first time. I thought it was just phenomenal line. And at that point I went, damn, I want to be there. And that's it. That's all you've got to achieve at this level of company. You want to get people buying tickets to go to these shows. I can't imagine how anyone who could have gone to that show would have saw that promo and then gone, I'm going to skip it. I just look phenomenal. We also had a very nice TV main event between Sabu and former WCW wrestler Too Cold Scorpio on the June the 14th edition. Sabu took a savage beating from Scorpio, showing his athletic prowess throughout the match with a top rope crossbody block, a top rope flying splash, and a plancher to the outside. Poorly dangerously, and 9-on-1 interfered. Sabu recovered and hit a moonsault over the barricade from the apron to Scorpio through a table. The Sandman Tommy Cairo Singapore Kane program continues with hosting a Singapore Kane on a pole match at the June taping. ECW also had more footage from When Worlds Collide, which was their show in May, showing the tape of Sandman repeatedly beating Cairo with a cane, and even Woman using the weapon on Miss Peaches. The story goes that despite the beating, Sandman still hasn't got his money he wants from Cairo, and the feud continues. And Shane Douglas and Mr. Fuse defeated the Bruise Brothers in a long cage match on the June 28th show, when Shane Douglas got knocked to the outside. Very decent cage match that as well. That will end the ECW TV review section. We will move on to the WWF. And King of the Ring, Colin, if you could read the results.
Right, in the King of the Ring quarter-final matches, we had Razor Ramon defeat Bam Bam Bigelow. Owen R. Scheister defeated the Massive Mabel. Owen Hart defeated Tatanka, and the 1-2-3 Kid beat Jeff Jarrett. We then had the WWF Championship match, which saw Diesel defeat Bret Hart, but by disqualification, thus Bret keeping the championship. Razor Ramon then went on to defeat IRS in the King of the Ring semi-final match. Owen Hart defeating the 1-2-3 Kid in his semi-final to set up the finals later on in the night. The Head Shrinkers defeated Crush and Yokozuna to retain the WWF Tag Team Championships. We then had the King of the Ring final match, which was Owen Hart defeating Razor Ramon to become the 1994 King of the Ring. And in the main event, Rowdy Roddy Piper defeated Jerry the King Lawler.
Del, your overall thoughts on the show?
I have a bit of a soft spot for the King of the Ring, to be honest, Bob. I thought it was a decent show. There was some good to potentially great matches, I thought, sprinkled through it. It's a difficult format to do on the one night, with it being the bracket format, with it being the potential for some of the talent having two, even three matches. Overall, considering that, plus the number of kind of guys on the books that weren't on the show, I thought it was pretty decent. I really enjoyed it.
Colin, anything stand out for you?
Well, I actually agree with Del. The King of the Ring format is a difficult thing to do because you have potential pairings that have great potential for a really good match, but they obviously have time constraints because they've got to get through the card. You've got Razor Ramon and Bam Bam has the potential to be a good match. You could see Owen Hart and Tatanka pulling off a good one. You could even have the 1-2-3 Kid, Jeff Jarrett. They're just three of the four first round matches. And then if you go on to Owen Hart and the 1-2-3 Kid in the semis, and then Owen and Razor in the finals, I don't think there was a King of the Ring match that went over 7 minutes. Owen Hart to Tanker might have gone a little bit longer.
Right, the opener went 8. I'm going to be pedantic, yes.
I'll let you be pedantic.
Your point largely stands, though. There are a lot of matches. I mean, there was a 1-2-3 Kid Jeff Jarrett match in the middle, which was 4 minutes, which was rather good, although I do have one major problem with. But we will start from the top. I'm going to deal with this now, and I'll mention it otherwise, but I think we should address it up front. The commentary team, Vince McMahon was in hospital having surgery on his neck, I believe, so he wasn't there. So the commentary team was Gorilla Monsoon, Randy Savage, and Art Donovan. Now, you might ask, who is Art Donovan? Now, for those who don't know, he's an American football player, who I think he played for the Baltimore Colts, I think. My knowledge of American football is terrible. But yes, so he was on commentary. I'm not really sure even why, because, okay, there is some logic behind kind of get someone who kind of, you know, is a big name in the area, get him in the arena. Great, a bit of an attraction. But nobody in the arena can hear the commentary.
No, he's literally just sitting there.
Yeah, there's no benefit to him being there, but Colin, I mean, how much does this guy weigh? That's my main takeaway from this.
How much does this guy weigh?
He said
what
that,
do you, what
oh,
do you
God,
call that? What,
he said that eight times.
No, nothing.
Eight or nine times, I think. Just how much does this guy weigh? Like, someone have fed him the line, when someone asks you who's going to win, say Razor Ramon. So he said Razor Ramon throughout the tournament. Obviously, you know, because he's the babyface and the guy in the local area, it was the guy going to the final. And then midway through the final, he just goes, no, I've changed my mind. I think Owen's going to win. He looks more athletic. That was it. and yeah, basically just, like, no real clue what was going on. I'm not particularly sure understood what wrestling was. He didn't know any of the guys' names beyond Razor Ramon, which he'd have been fed. He was sat on commentary just chipping in. I mean, there's possibly the greatest thing I have seen since starting this project was Lex Luger, I believe, came out at the end of the tag match about two-thirds of the way into the show. And Luger stood there, he's in his American gear, wearing a white shirt with the American flag, and I think he presumably comes out to save the baby faces. Like, Luger's involved in about six different feuds at the moment. And so Luger's there, and then Art Donovan, let me frame all this by saying that Lex Luger, up until about 3 months ago, was being pushed to the hilt as the big name, the Hulk Hogan 2.0. We've been through this in the last year on the show. And Art Donovan goes, Randy, who's this guy? It's Lex Luger! Colin, go on.
Do you not think, though, that Randy Savage, of all people, had the patience of a saint?
Oh, God.
The amount of questions he fielded from Art Donovan.
I mean,
what do you call that, Randy?
How much does this guy weigh? Dale, why did nobody pull the plug? We'll start the show review in a minute. Dale, why did nobody pull the plug on this? I mean,
do you want to know what he reminded me of?
Go on.
Do you remember in World of Sport, there was always old women, and they were always at the front with their knitting? It's like he'd forgot his knitting.
Or a handbag.
He'd forgot his knitting, and it was just passing the time to the bell ring at the last time.
I mean,
eventually
they started ignoring him, but Colin, you're right, Savage, like, stuck with him for so long, covered him, and why, at the end of the first hour, they didn't just cut to a backstage segment, come and just say, look, this isn't working, whatever, just say, Art Donovan, everybody, he waves to the crowd, wanders off, and then we carry on without him. I've no idea. We've opened the show with it, and it wasn't like it distracted from the show. It probably took away from it, but it's not like it was a case of this ruined the show. But it was so bad. Like, why didn't... I don't know. Anyway, we will mention that, but I wanted to address it now rather than addressing it about six times during the view. Long story short, this was being built... They said that the buzz phrase, and we'll come to this later on, the buzz phrase in WWF is New Generation. Jerry Lawler versus Roddy Piper in the main event, notwithstanding. New Generation, they ran this throughout the show, and we'll come to the video packages when we get it. So we started off with a segment with the four King of the Ring quarterfinal heels in front of the kind of magnetic board with the tournament ladders, or brackets as Americans would call them, moving their name down the thing, and like Bam Bam said, I'm going to win, and Double J said, I'm going to win, etc., etc. We had the national anthem from Ricky Medlock, the lead singer of Blackfoot. I believe he sung it, which is very much a switch up from, was it Little Richard who sang at WrestleMania, Colin?
Did he mime?
So, that wasn't
Johnny B. Batt.
No. But believe it or not, they are two separate people.
It may be Johnny B. Batt. We don't know. Art Donovan on commentary predicted Razor winning King of the Ring. I'll put these in. Anyway, first match, Bam Bam Bigelow versus Razor Ramon. We had Bam Bam going for a diving headbutt, but Razor moved out of the way. Bam Bam put Razor in a long kind of torture rack type maneuver. Razor's comeback was cut off, and then Bam Bam went for a moonsault. Razor jumped up and powerbombed him, not obviously in midair, just ran up and then threw him off the turnbuckle. And then pinned him for the three count. Big crowd pop. Colin, not a bad opener. 8 minutes, two guys who could probably have a better match if there was more in it, but as an opener, I thought this was fine.
Well, it's about as good an opening pairing for an opening match in a bracket system you could hope for. I mean, Bam Bam Bigelow showed last year that he's capable of having some very good matches.
Absolutely.
So to pair him with Razor Ramon, who's a guy that WWF know is money for them, you can't ask for much more, really.
No.
Exactly the same. To be honest, Bob, it was the opening segment when they're all at the Board of Brackets with Todd Pettigill, looking at the matches that's coming up. It was definitely a standout Bam Bam Razor. Format King of the Ring obviously has a bit of a disappointment where they are stuck to that 7 or 8 minute limit to kind of try and squeeze in the double figure matches into the card. But wasn't it disappointing? Bam Bam just reminds you that he is actually that size. I mean, the standard insecurities, the attempts at the moonsaults, it's as good as you're going to get, as Colin says, for an opener.
We cut backstage with IRS and Mabel having a promo. IRS thinking ahead to his semi-final match with Razor Ramon, and Mabel saying, no, don't overlook me. We then got a generic IRS promo in front of the crowd, just him calling them tax cheats. And then we got to the match, Mabel versus IRS. IRS won after Mabel went for the top rope and IRS knocked him off and then just pinned him. Dale, this was kind of as bad as it was going to be, I think.
Pretty much. I mean, looking at the bracket, it was certainly the one that least stood out as the potential to steal it. It never disappointed, to be honest. The only thing that kind of stood out to me is looking back to the Bam Bam Razor match. Bam Bam goes to the top looking for a moonsault. Razor pulls him down, rolls him up for the pin. Mabel goes to the top rope. IRS takes him down, grabs the ropes and pins him, which I thought was a bit strange, having a format where you've got a lot of kind of 5-7 minute matches and having two pretty much with the same ending at the beginning of the show was a bit weird. But as I said, it gave me something to look at as opposed to looking at IRS and Mabel, I suppose.
Yeah, it was short. It wasn't sweet, but it was what it was. We cut backstage in the dressing room, I think, of Jim Cornette, Mr. Fuji, Crush, and Yokozuna preparing for their tag team title match. Standard, very good Jim Cornette promo, and then Crush and Yokozuna chase the cameraman out. Then we got two Tatanka versus Owen Hart. Very fast start. The action spilled onto the outside pretty quickly. Owen drove Tatanka into the post. Owen hit a top rope dropkick for a near fall. In the middle of all this, we cut backstage for a confrontation between Razor Ramon and IRS, obviously doing their semi-final match. We had a rest hold. I've got Tatanka hulks up. I don't know necessarily whether that's applied correctly or not. A lovely DDT by Tatanka. A jumping elbow for a two count. Tatanka goes for a sunset flip, but Owen sat down on it and picked up the pin. Dale, this was about as good a quarterfinal match as you're going to get, I think. Nice fast
pretty
pace,
much,
some good wrestling,
I mean,
and Owen won clean. Yeah.
Exactly. We're calling again saying at the start, the two kind of standouts, certainly first round for me, were Bam Bam, Bam Bam Razor and Tatanka Owen. It was as good as you were going to get with those four square off. Bam Bam, Bam Bam Razor was solid. This was solid as well. They'd done what they could with the time constraints. Pretty good aerial work for Owen in between. There was good exchanges. Again, another bit of kind of, not a definitive end with Tatanka being on the offensive. Owen just sits down, takes him for the pin, but working with the constraints of the 5-7 minutes, another decent showing.
Go on, Colin.
I mean, out of the quarterfinal matches, three of them make perfect sense to me. But IRS and Mabel, I don't get it. I mean, I know you probably want the IRS and Razor Ramon thing for the second round, which makes sense to a point. But why Mabel?
I thought but what happened to Mo?
I was wondering that. So he comes out with Oscar as the hype man, but no more. So is that a case where that's the only...
If you're going to pair IRS with somebody, put him in, and you have to obviously pair him with a face because they need him to go against Razor Ramon in the next round. What kind of match are you going to get out of IRS and Mabel, really? You wouldn't book them in a random encounter on Raw or Superstars anyway, so why do it on a pay-per-view?
I don't know.
That was the bracket, isn't it?
You could have just gone with some You could have gone with Randy, I don't know.
Thurman Plug.
There's plenty of people that you could have put in there.
Getting up Donovan off the desk would have been the worst idea. But.
Yes, very well said. We come backstage, Trey Diesel and Shawn Michaels promo. Michaels pretend to be upset at hurting Brett. We got a very wooden Diesel promo which ended saying two words, jackknife, referring to the powerbomb and the segment on Raw where Diesel laid out Brett with the jackknife powerbomb. We cut to Double J, Jeff Jarrett versus the 1-2-3 Kid. Kid went for a kick, but Jarrett dropped to the outside. Kid missed a senton from the top rope as well. Nice crossbody to Jeff Jarrett. Jarrett went for a submission. Kid rolled him up for a small package to win the match. After the match, Jarrett, who was rather irate at having lost the match, hit three pile drivers on the 1-2-3 Kid. Dale, your thoughts on this match?
The first highlight for me personally, Bob, was the 1-2-3 Kid get announced from Minneapolis, Minnesota, the 1-2-3 Kid. Art Donovan, who's this now? Was the first highlight. Jeff Jarrett's flying elbow off the top, worst elbow I've ever seen.
Wasn't great.
Every time. He'd done it four times. If he'd do that like an hour before the show, he might get there. But again, quarterfinal match. 1-2-3 Kid goes forward. Brilliant match and prospect with Owen Hart. The only disappointment was the beatdown at the end for Jarrett. Makes a lot of sense for Jarrett going forward. Didn't really do it for me with the prospect and Owen Hart 1-2-3 Kid match in the next round. It did give the Kid a good kind of underdog story to work with. But the fact that he's going to have to come into that match selling, possibly going to take away for the match when it happens.
Save it. I'm going to get there when we get to it on that bit.
Yeah, but no, I'm just saying is that they don't need to make him an underdog.
He is the underdog.
That's his Done gimmick.
It. Yeah. I've got more to say on that when we get to it. We had a video package, old versus new. Old was lots of slow things, new was lots of quick things. And then in the old thing, just trying to find the list of wrestlers, we had a kind of cross on the screen with kind of four, like they kind of crossed off the screen into four sections and showed clips of Andre the Giant, Iron Sheik, Ivan Putski and Hulk Hogan. Yes, that's right. Hogan, who appeared debuting on WCW the following week, was shown as old, and new was very much, and the old clips were in black and white, new was very much in vibrant colour, and we got Bret Hart, and we got Razor Ramon, and we got Owen Hart and guys like this. So very much the old and the new. Old apparently doesn't apply to the main event, but we'll get to that when we come to it.
Lest we also forget, Bob, just before we move on, you refer to the old being slow, the fast being new. Quite a prominent position for Mabel in the new generation, apparently.
Very much so. Bret Hart promo, put over the jackknife powerbomb. A bit awkward, a few mistakes, but he says he has a plan for the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. So we get to the WWF title match, Bret Hart versus Diesel. And who is Bret? What is Bret's plan for Shawn Michaels? It is none other than his former tag team partner, Jim the Anvil Neidhart. Long match. I won't go through all of my notes, but a lot of selling. Bret was working his leg throughout the match, and then Diesel worked Bret's back. Shawn at one point loosened the turnbuckle pad, and then Bret drove Diesel's head into it after they kind of stalled for a bit. We got a sharpshooter. HBK got nailed by Bret, punched him. The crowd popped big for that. The ref gets distracted. HBK hits Bret over the back with the title belt, but Bret kicks out the pin. Diesel stands up, hits the jackknife powerbomb on Bret, and then as that happens, Jim the Anvil Neidhart runs into the ring and hits Diesel for the DQ. Bret. Diesel wins by DQ, but Bret retains his title. Dell, apparently Diesel had a torn groin going into this match as well. Not that it necessarily showed, or not necessarily trying to see athletic anyway. This was by all standards of the men involved and proof how good Bret was, this was a really good match.
I'll be honest, I actually watched it twice. I watched it once and I heard the news about Diesel, about there possibly being a twinge, and I went back and watched it, and I was slightly more impressed with Diesel, I must admit, the second time knowing that. It's still obviously early days for him with his singles run. Defensively, I didn't really see him offering too much when Brett was on the attack. You could have pretty much replaced Diesel with X, Y, or Z, and it wouldn't have made a huge difference. But when he did start kind of getting the heat up and Brett was kind of struggling, there was certainly a lot more potential there than I thought there was previously. There was a bit in the middle that was a bit not pretty to look at, where Diesel tried to catch Brett coming from the top rope. There was a bit of a botch there. Whether that's injury related, hindsight, we don't really know. But as I say, offensively, I was actually pretty impressed with Diesel on second view, and there's a bit of potential there.
Colin, the placing of the title match, before I go into the post-match stuff, odd, given it was about the top of the second hour.
Yes, that's about the one word you need to use for the placement of that match. Odd. Just makes... It's the WWF title. It's got to be the last match of the night. I mean, you could make an argument that the King of the Ring final match could be the last match of the night, being that it's the King of the Ring pay-per-view. But having the WWF title match mid-card, to me, just seems weird.
Yeah.
We talked about Diesel months ago, didn't we? Back at the Royal Rumble. Asked what was next for him after that great showing. And here he is 5 months later fighting for the WWF title.
It's not bad while you can get it.
With the Intercontinental title around his waist as well.
He's had a good 6 months. I think we'll certainly say that. Anyway, after the match, Jimmy and Neidhart just ran off. And then Diesel and Sean beat down Brett. And then the one positive thing I can say about Art Donovan, although this was just him rambling, it wasn't anything planned, he said, "Is anyone going to help Brett out?" And I kind of went, "Yeah, isn't anyone going to help him out?" Because he was just getting beat down 2-on-1. All right, eventually the refs ran out. But you're thinking, well, okay, Jim Neidhart's ran out.
It's hard to make
that. And obviously that we'll tie up later in the show. But was there nobody backstage who thought, hang on a minute, Brett's getting his backside handed to him here, I'm going to go out and even up the numbers? A fair point. And I think it's kind of one of those things where, okay, not that much of what Art Donovan said was planned, if at all, but that's a logic hole that you can't really expose. And not that you had much control over it, but odd.
It takes somebody like Art Donovan with zero wrestling experience to show the glaring Art Donovan can pick it out right out straight away. That shows you how silly it is.
Pretty much. And yeah, you know, just, okay. And eventually the rest did come out to help Brett, but not long after the match was done. We had Jerry Lawler promo, says the King of the Ring was named after him, and amongst other things, built up his match with Roddy Piper. Very good promo. Can't complain about that. The first semi-final, Razor Ramon versus IRS. We got another IRS promo live in front of the crowd. The same thing. Call them all tax cheats. We've got the pro again. I mean, like, maybe do that in front of the crowd so when you cut back to him, he's getting booed, but don't show the thing twice.
It's bad enough. I mean, you see him on Superstars or on Raw if he comes out for a match and cuts the pro, and you just sit there and go, oh, here we go. Twice on pay-per-view.
And the one thing that genuinely upset me as well, because IRS is coming out doing a promo, his weight does not get announced. Which, it broke my heart, I don't know about Art Donovan.
Yeah, Weight Watch with Art Donovan. The match itself, Del, wasn't a ton to speak of. A couple of nice spots involving a jump to the outside and a bump on the ring steps. Razor Ramon hit the Razor's Edge and won the match. Nothing to write home about, 5 minutes.
Pretty much, issue you get with the multiple match format, Bob. It's just, they want Razor Bam Bam, they want Razor Owen. This is just a case of they've got to go through it to get there.
Got the match in the middle. Bret Hart was backstage looking for Jim the Anvil. Neidhart couldn't find him. The Wanted Three Kid no-showed his interview set up with Todd Pettingill. So we get to Owen Hart versus the 1-2-3 Kid. Owen comes out and the 1-2-3 Kid's music hits. And it takes a while, takes a very long while. And they're saying, well, maybe he's not going to make it. Three piles, rather. Fair enough. And Owen, the 1-2-3 Kid eventually does kind of stumble out. He's visibly very injured. And then, Del, the match starts, And all of a sudden, he's fine. And he proceeds to have...
Pretty much.
He proceeds to have what in isolation is one of the best 3.5 minute matches you will ever see. It was crisp. There was a load of high flying action. There was a moonsault. There was a crossbody block from the top rope. They were flying all around the ring. It was really nice.
It's my match of the night, apart from that one
thing. What happened?
The 90 seconds that it took him to walk, 30, 40 feet, he was struggling. He was a man, dead man walking.
So Owen jumps out of the ring, attacks him, they get back in the ring, all of a sudden he's got this like burst of energy,
yep.
He vaults on the top rope and hits a spinning moonsault to Owen stood back in the ring.
Yeah. Small thing I noticed in it as well, and it was actually something that annoyed me, to start with, was the count from, I think it's a young referee, Mike Chioda, I think it is. It was a very, very fast count throughout the film match. When he false finishes, it was rapidly slammed into the mat. But in hindsight, I think it actually helped the match, because they were given, you'll probably be able to tell me the time, but I would have guessed 4 or 5 minutes.
3.5.
That match, 3.5.
Yeah.
I wasn't even thinking it was that short. That match did not stop. It was like a train for 3.5 minutes.
We even got a false finish where the kid hit a belly-to-belly with Bridge and the ref counted 3, but he saw
Owen's
afterwards
that Owen was on the ropes, right. Yeah.
And then Owen went for a sharpshooter and won the match. Colin, again, if you watch this match in isolation, it's a tremendous match, but I hated it for all of the above.
Could you make an argument that it's the most action-packed 3.5 wrestling match you've ever seen in your life?
Oh, easily.
It's ridiculous.
It's a fantastic match, but who put this together? Who went, go out selling, and then the match will start and start flying around the ring? Like,
go for that. Yeah.
If you're going to do that, make it the opening round. You need to plan far enough ahead, given that you've got the bracket set up on TVs beforehand. But if you want them to have 4 minutes action pack, it was probably the best match of the night. At least do it, or just don't do the Jeff Jarrett beatdown afterwards.
Yeah, you didn't need the beatdown. It's like we said earlier, we did. He doesn't need to be made the underdog. He is the underdog. That's the gimmick he's got. So. Yeah, the selling coming down to the ring, and then it's like the magic healing properties of the squared circle. Completely fine. Moonsaults and the most action-packed 3.5 minutes you're probably going to see this year.
Absolutely. We cut backstage. Roddy Piper is getting dressed, and there's a camera in with him. I didn't write anything from this promo, but it was rather good. Then we have the tag team title match, the Headshringers versus Crush and Yokozuna. Both teams had two managers, and another, I think, in the small zone of fair enough questions for Art Donovan to ask was how many people are in this match? Because we had the Headshringers with Samu Fatu and their manager and Lou Albano. And then we had Crush and Yokozuna with Mr. Fuji and Yokozuna's American spokesperson, Jim Cornette. So 8 people out in the ring. Dale, your thoughts on this match?
Pretty much, I was actually glad to see it, if I'm honest, Bob. It's King of the Ring, as I say, is a soft spot for me, and having the tag match on it, you could argue that it was just there as a filler, but I thought it's the first time I've really looked at the Headshrinkers and actually appreciated what they do. And you can actually see their style becoming, hopefully, the norm in the next few years. The athleticism in it, I thought was brilliant. There was, just throughout the full match, I thought they were brilliantly as a unit. The athleticism, as I say, was there. The only one stickler that I did have with the match, I can't even remember who was offense, who was defense, but there was a one count and a pile driver, which was my only jab with the full match.
Yeah, particularly as early, I was about to say earlier in the show, 1-2-3 kid got laid out by 3, but apparently the pile driver, because Lord Steve Real kicked out one, the pile driver isn't a very effective move anymore, it would seem. Mm. That's the only logical conclusion from...
Don't tell Jerry Lawler.
That's true. That's very true. Go on, Colin.
If you could, just magnify Yokozuna for a second, not that you need to magnify Yokozuna. 3 months ago, he was main event in WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And then skip forward to King of the Ring, he's jobbing to the Head Shrinkers.
Yep. Yep.
So that's a fall from grace.
Oh, I didn't put this in my TV notes. Do you two both know who he's feuding with now?
No.
No.
Typhoon is back.
Yeah,
serious.
Shockmaster from WWE.
Shockmaster's back.
And he is feuding with Yokozuna. That's Typhoon.
Does he fall through a wall when he comes back?
No, he doesn't. He should. He really should.
That would have been brilliant.
But yeah.
Is this because he's got an ongoing gripe with the fall that Earthquake had to take to Yoko in recent times? He's back with a vengeance.
I don't know. Is there not? But yes, that happened. I mean, the match itself wasn't all that noteworthy, and I guess it was kind of in the filler spot, really kind of the cool down before the final. There was a really odd bit where we got USA chants, and there was one. Like, Yokozuna is American in real life, but from Japan. Crush is American, but playing Hawaiian, and that's not always easy. And then we've got the two Samoans who are, I think, might be American or might not be in real life, I'm not sure. So we've got all that. And then, so we've got the USA chat, and there's the other weird thing where, Fatu and Yokozuna are real life brothers on opposing sides. As an interesting side note. In amongst.
You're not supposed to tell them that.
Well, you know, I'm just saying, just tidbits. you know, so we get all that, but that was interesting. Yeah, it was an odd matchup, but it wasn't all that bad. It's a decent tag match. And I think, Dale, you're right. When you've had IRS doing another promo and you're seeing the same guys over and over again, it's nice to have something.
It was just refreshing because, I mean, how many times so far have we said, 4-5 minute match, pretty standard stuff, not much else to report. It was just nice to have a bit of a change in the middle of the card.
So Lex Luger comes out, he's feuding with Crush.
With the most spectacular spandex I have ever seen.
What was it? I remember the shirt, I don't remember the spandex.
It was just a pinstripe red, white and blue, but it then turned into be a full spandex jumpsuit, which I just loved.
Yeah, and then we got the great line from Art Donovan, who's this?
That shows why he was in the main event.
Oh boy!
Oh my God! It's Lex Luger. It's Lex Luger.
That's the thing. They it's not like Lex Luger comes out and Art Donovan's the first guy to speak up and say who is this guy. They said it's Lex Luger. It's Lex Luger, and then Art Donovan went about 15 seconds there. Randy, who is this guy?
Yeah, but then you could use Art Donovan as the perfect example of the WWF fans and the reason why Lex Luger was never WWF champion.
Perhaps. Although, in Art Donovan's fence, I'm not sure the average WWF fan knows how much Lex Luger weighs anyway.
The average WWF fan might not know who Art Donovan is.
Well, that's true. That's true as well. Owen, backstage promo with Owen, says he will win on his own. So he just said he will win King of the Ring and he wishes his dad a happy Father's Day. The King of the Ring final, Razor Ramon versus Owen Hart. An even match, nothing. Down as a final, this was disappointing. It only got 6 minutes, never really got going. And then Jim Neidhart runs out, attacks Razor, obviously with the referee's back turned. Owen hits the top rope elbow drop, wins, and becomes King of the Ring. Tell your thoughts.
It's pretty much that. But again, it's another, I think it's felt at the cost of the multi-match setup with the time, the fact that they've wrestled, this is our third time. It started off with a decent pace. There was some good exchanges during it. It was a good attempt at a bridge and a reversal, which they kind of struggled with, just I would imagine due to probably fatigue as much as anything else. But as you say, with the time that they get with the amount of matches on the card, plus this is their third, it kind of done what it should, but not a lot else.
Yeah, and then we've got the... We had a 2-1 beatdown after the match. Crowd chanting, "We want Brett." There was no Brett. Yeah. yes, we cut backstage. We had the coronation first, of course. The coronation of Owen Hart. with, yeah, basically it was just, Owen kind of was healing it up. He asked, like, Todd Bettengill to kneel down to him while he was holding up the mic. And yeah, Dallas, as Owen promos goes, we've spoken about Owen's promo ability before. Really good promo, I thought, by his own
really
standards.
Strong.
And the takeaway was, I am now the King of Hearts. I thought, by his standards, a home run promo.
Well, that's it. I mean, looking back to WrestleMania, obviously Owen got the win over Bret at WrestleMania, and you kind of think that's them maybe just giving him his moment. Following it up with, one, a King of the Ring victory, and two, how he kind of, he hurt that promo at the park, I would say. It could be, hopefully, a real kind of trigger point for his career moving on, touch wood.
So we go backstage. Bret Hart is asked if he's got any comments. He says no. And then there's an amazing moment where Todd Bettengill asks the Maryland governor, William Schaefer, about the main event, and Schaefer mentions Hulk Hogan, and no one else. Yep. Oh, yeah. Oh, God. That happened. And then to the main event, Lawler cut a promo, Roddy Piper comes out to bagpipes, which is quite nice. I will, for the sake of the story in this match, I will just insert a little bit from my TV review now, because you'll need the context. I think the first episode of Raw in June, they had a King's Court segment, with Jerry Lawler promising to interview Roddy Piper, but it wasn't Roddy Piper. It was a small man dressed up as Roddy Piper, pretending to be Roddy Piper. And basically the guy kind of ripped on Piper, and then King forced him to kiss his foot, and then he left. But the small guy was back, and this time he was on Piper's side. And the story they told, which I kind of like, was that the kid didn't really know what he was getting in for when he signed up to it, and Piper obviously took him under his kind of just, so he's out with him as well.
Yeah.
There was that. Dale, your thoughts on this show, on this match rather.
I must admit, I really liked the build. The full kind of King's Court segments leading into it, and then the flashbacks with Piper, it did build it up better than I was expecting reading the match card to start with. The obvious kind of issue with it, even going back to what we spoke about before, the amount of emphasis that the new generations had. You've got Lawler, must be 43, 44. You've got Piper, must be 40s as well. Why was the only issue kind of going into it? But they done a job. I mean, obviously it's a bit different seeing Piper these days as the face, but he's got the crowd on board. They did look, considering the thing I'd mentioned, 2 years he's been in ring, he did look phenomenal.
Oh God, ripped.
The mic work was brilliant, but as I say, just as soon as the t-shirt came off, it was like, sure, this is a 40-year-old man we're looking at here. He did look brilliant. Just a pretty solid main event. There wasn't really anything spectacular in it, but it was just two old pros kind of doing what they need to do, I have to say.
There's no doubt that Roddy Piper is a big name in professional wrestling, but how does he maneuver himself into the closing match of a pay-per-view, having not been in a wrestling ring for 2 years?
We'll focus on the bigger picture stuff in a minute. I want to go through the match, but it's a very fair point. So there was a ref bump. The kid who was dressed as Piper was on the outside. He got involved in the match. Lawler hit Piper with a foreign object, pinned him, but, the slow count, the kid pushed Lawler's leg off the ropes, because Lawler was lent on the ropes. Piper hit a back suplex, one with a slow count. It was, the bill wasn't that good, because it was hard to kind of really work out what their gripe was. Like, it was just kind of, that they never, because Piper didn't appear on TV other than in random backstage segments,
Some of his segments were filmed on a home video camera as well.
It seemed so. We had decisively dodgy looking box beard. Yeah.
That was weird.
Yeah, and a match that lacked heat, that lacked context, that lacked any real build. In the main event, the crowd weren't all that into it. I mean, it was a nice enough finish, but it was a really flat way to end the show. And particularly it's not... You can understand more if you've had a few injuries or booking plans haven't gone quite right. We need a main event. let's go with a couple of big names. Let's fudge it. You've got two ready-made main events earlier in the show. The final of the King of the Ring, which didn't get anywhere near enough time, could have really done with the 11 minutes this match got on top of the six they did. And the title match. It's not like you needed a title match. You know, it's not like you needed a main event. You had two pretty good ones, unless they thought that, God, we need... And even if they thought, Brett versus Diesel isn't going to draw, well, then firstly, why do it? And maybe they thought, well, King of the Ring, people don't know what the main event is, maybe that's not going to work. Fine. Put this match in the middle of the show. And then if there is the residual attraction of people going, the kicker being Lawler Piper's on the show, that's going to make me buy it and I wouldn't have bought it before, it's not in the main event.
Because to me, you swap Piper and Lawler with Brett and Diesel.
Yeah.
That just makes more sense.
We'll come to the bigger picture stuff just after we wrap up the show. Del, your thoughts and a score rating.
Overall, I've gave it 7. As I say, there was a couple of decidedly dodgy booking decisions, particularly, not like a flashback to it, but the 1-2-3 kid sale job. But I mean, overall, with the format, as I say, I do have a soft spot for it. I thought there was some good matchups made with the brackets. I thought they did pretty well in putting that together, apart from the obvious IRS Mabel effort, which didn't really make any sense. The fact that you're getting Bam Bam Razor, Owen Razor, 1-2-3 Kid Owen. There's some good matches in there. I thought they filled it out well with the time that they had. The tag match in the middle was pretty refreshing as a break. Again, just repeating what you guys have said, the only thing was the placement of Lawler Piper, which didn't really make any sense for me. You'd expect either the title or the final of the King of the Ring to sell it for the main event, but overall I thought it was a decent show. The flashes in the middle, as I say, particularly Owen and the kid sell job aside, I thought it merited a 7 overall, and Art Donovan was just a bonus for me.
Colin?
I've got it as just about a 7. For me, the booking timing and the placement of matches just baffled me. Much like Dell said, there are some very good opportunities for good matches, but none of them were really given enough time. The only match given sizable time was the WWF title match. Yeah, just about a 7.
I gave it a 4.5.
Wow.
Yeah, there were some positives. Owen Hart was a positive. The title match was a positive. But there were a lorry load of bad to inexcusable things on this show that took it down a fair few pegs. We've spoken about them all, but in short, the main event of a show that you're proclaiming to be the new generation, two guys over the age of 40 with poor bills, was a terrible main event. As main events go, it was a terrible main event. It wasn't necessarily a bad match. I mean, these two guys are both pros. Bit old, but they put on an okay showing, but it wasn't a pay-per-view main event. The 1-2-3 kid stuff is inexcusable. I mean, again, there are so many away. If you want them to have a world-class 3-minute match, which they did have, that you can work around it, but don't book yourself into the corner and then try and explain it, because it just takes you out the moment. And then, yeah, just other things are flat. Art Donovan was terrible. The opening round stuff was bad. Interference in both the WWF title match and the King of the Ring final, which is kind of WCW style. It's one of those things where the match quality, the Brett Diesel match was really good. I wonder whether Diesel, how many years Diesel's going to have to put in to be able to have a match as good as that, because that was exceptional relative to where I thought it would be. But yeah, just so many things wrong with it. I mean, Art Donovan, I mean, the straw that broke the camel's back. I mean, how much does this guy weigh? Maybe we'll never know. But that was that. We've got a couple of things to discuss. I'm going to run through the because I don't want to end on the TV reviews. So I'll do the TV review and then we'll discuss the King of the Ring format briefly and the new generation thing before we finish the show. TV reviews this month on Raw, the King's Court thing with the fake Piper I've mentioned, WWF Hall of Fame inductions, Arnold Scarlin, Bobo Brazil, Buddy Rogers, Chief J Strongbow, Classy Freddie Blassie, Gorilla Monsoon and James Dudley. We had, I just remembered this bit. It's gone to the back of my mind. We had a King's Court segment that aired following King of the Ring, which got WWF into some very hot water and caused some very swift backtracking, both later in the show and the following week. Due to concerns over some government violence on television, WWF have made some changes to how they do their shows, toning down some of the elements, including no more crotch shots, choking and foreign objects. There's even... apparently, Razor Ramon can't even flick his toothpick at people anymore. I don't know why. This was starkly shown on television in the week after King of the Ring. We had Jerry Lawler with Duke the Dumpster Druzy, who's a new character who's basically a garbage man. He came out with his garbage can, and basically, because they were airing live, Druzy went to walk off, and Lawler attacked him from behind, picked up his garbage can and whacked him over the head with it a couple of times. Now, the camera was panned in on this shot, and very quickly they switched to a wide angle and panned out and went to a break. When they came back, there was no follow-up, and later in the show, Gorilla Monsoon and Randy Savage had to issue an apology. Gorilla said that the garbage can was used for purposes, quote-unquote, other than which it was intended, because the garbage can was meant to be to clean up garbage in the middle of a Raw segment, apparently. On the following Raw, Lawler had to make a forced apology, in character at least, for his actions on the previous show, which he did so reluctantly. The Undertaker, we've covered this, but I'll mention again, The Undertaker returned to WWF TV, but not the original. Brian Lee debuted as The Undertaker 2, winning a squash over PJ Walker. The fake Taker was dressed close to his real one as possible with his mannerisms and moveset. It even dubbed the real Taker's voice over Lee's promo. The only major difference being that obviously when Taker does his pin, he flicks his head back, flipping his hair to reveal his face. This one, obviously, because it's not the real Taker, he flips his hair forward, so it covers his face when they go in the close-up. Jim Neidhart's promo on King of the Ring, after King of the Ring, sorry, basically played into the Bret and Owen storyline, implying that the Anvil did all the work in their tag team. Bret never said thank you and was only in it for himself. Neidhart said he screwed Diesel so that Owen will be the rightful winner of the WWF title. Colin, we'll touch briefly on the King of the Ring thing because I don't want to do too long on that because we've gone long enough in the show anyway, but I do want to talk about the new generation thing before we finish. King of the Ring first, Colin, I mean, is it a format that works in a pay-per-view in terms of 10 matches I just think is too many for a pay-per-view, and I think it showed.
It's so challenging because the idea is to get us all interested and invested into the matches that we're watching. It's the reason why you buy the pay-per-view. Yes, you're building up the brackets on your weekly TV show, but it's hard when you know for a fact that these matches are going to be over within 5-10 minutes. In some cases, not, as we know about the 1-2-3 Kid match. It's a really tough format, but I do like it. I like the tournament aspect, but I wonder if maybe they could do more of the bracket on TV and then save
the semi-finals
and the final.
It
would free up some more space for other people on the card as well, so.
I pretty much agree exactly what we're calling there, Bob. I think it's the issue that they've got, if they're going to keep it going as an annual event, is the balance between thinning out the brackets on the night itself, so maybe putting them on a TV, maybe leading up 3-4 weeks, or do they keep it on the main show? Because if you're opening up the bracket at the start of that pay-per-view and you're seeing it through to fruition, there's an level of investment in that. But if you sacrifice that to get the matches more time, are you maybe going to be losing that investment for your audience? I think that's something that they need to be working out before next year's event.
No, you're not every point I had, because if you give the 7 matches more time, you can only advertise the King of the Ring and maybe a title match, which maybe isn't enough. And I think maybe, Colin, you've hit on the right answer, which is maybe to do the quarterfinals on TV, and then all of a sudden you've only got 3 matches, and then that can maybe take up an hour and 15 minutes of the show, and then all of a sudden you've got room for 4 or 5 more, which is about right. But 10 is too many, I think, and that showed, because you just, like, the final wasn't long enough. Like, the final was 6 minutes. It never got going. It wasn't a particularly good match. It wasn't bad. Razor and Owen are two good wrestlers. But it just was what it was. Del, let's talk about this new generation thing. Billing, I mean, maybe this was one and done. Maybe they are, I assume they are, kind of going forward, going to push the new generation guys. Maybe let's put aside the jokes of, ha-ha, you're building it as a new generation with Roddy Piper and Jerry Lawler. Let's talk about the idea of trying to build a new generation as a countenance to Hulk Hogan debuting in WCW.
On paper, very exciting. The only thing that causes a bit of concern for myself, as I say earlier on, they're showing the old, they're showing the new. Mabel's there front, right and centre.
And so is Diesel.
Exactly. It's something where if they had the confidence to push this new generation, you've got a Bret Hart there, you've got an Owen Hart there, you've got Shawn Michaels, you get Razor Ramon. That's four leaders right away that could inspire a locker room, but are they going to pick the right ones? I mean, bearing in mind the mega, mega push for Lex Luger that we've just came off, that was seen as your figurehead for the new generation before it was even called the new generation. Is it a case where they're going to have the ability to see into the future to pick the right people, or is it a case where it's maybe going to be a 3, 4, 5, 6 month long programme that fails because they maybe pick the wrong people or they don't have the faith in the right people for long enough?
Colin?
I think you have the old versus new videos that they're obviously editing it to make you seem like the, you know, the Hogans and the Andres of the past and the boring part of the old generation. You do run the risk of people seeing those videos and even though they've edited them favourably towards the new guys, somebody might sit and go, oh, do you remember when Hogan was on? Do you remember when Andre was on? Oh, yeah, I remember that. I love that. That's the good old wrestling.
Or maybe going, Hogan's on WCW next week. I'm going to watch that.
Well, that's just it. Somebody said, oh, do you remember when Hogan used to be on WWF? That was great. Oh, don't you know he's on Turner Network? Oh, is he? Oh, I better watch that then. It's an odd one.
I quite like the idea of almost kind of going, look, this is where the cool guys are, but it's a half-assed way of doing it in the sense that one, you are doing it not by choice because you've got no established star power. Two, you're doing it on a show main evented by Roddy Piper and Jerry Lawler, which, you know, maybe doesn't say it to the average fan. Like, I kind of think it would. But to guys like us, basically just sticks out as we don't really have any confidence in the new generation anyway. And three, I think my biggest point is that you can say all you want, it's the new generation, it's fast, it's exciting. But it doesn't work unless it is fast and it is exciting. And not enough of their current product fits that description. Okay, you had the Owen Hart 1-2-3 Kid match, which maybe fit that bill. And maybe 99% of people watching didn't get quite so angry or angry at all at the build, what the story going into that match and really enjoyed it. But if the show as a whole and the wrestlers that were chosen to be in the key spots fit that description, I think I would go, great idea, big success. Well, they're not big success, but well executed. But saying it and doing it are two different things. And at the moment, they are very much saying it, but they're not really doing it. And as I say, I come back to the joke. You're going to court the new generation, and your main event is Roddy Piper and Jerry Lawler. I think you're half, any half smart WWF fan would go, that's weird. And that's the long and the short of it. Anyway, that will bring to a conclusion this month's show, long one. We will go with our matches or moment of the month. Del?
It's still got to be Owen Hart 1-2-3 Kid for me, despite the long walk to the ring. As soon as Owen Hart done that baseball slide through the bottom ropes, that was me. It started, it ended, and I loved it.
Colin?
Mine is Owen becoming the King of the Ring, making the Hart family 2-0 at the King of the Ring pay-per-view.
Yeah, That's true. I mean, that's one good thing coming out of it is that Brett, King of the Ring last year, ended up with a title. Owen is King of the Ring and is going to be in a title match very soon.
Yeah, they're aiming now. I mean, with the whole Jim Neidhart thing, they're definitely aiming towards Owen chasing Brett, so.
Connor, I'll ask a quick question. I know we're kind of in moments from that, but it may not make sense to give Owen the Hart the title, but as a pure way of building King of the Ring next year, is it worth maybe having Owen win it just so you can say the last two King of the Ring winners have gone on to win the WWE title?
Well, it adds prestige to the title even more, doesn't it?
What, King of the Ring or the WWE?
Yeah, the King of the Ring title, yeah. You have Brett go on to win, and then you say you have Owen go on to win. You can then go into the next year's show saying, we've had two pay-per-views, and both of the men that have won have gone on to win the biggest prize in our sport. So it adds a little bit more prestige to the crown, doesn't it?
It's actually the best argument I come up with for Owen beating Brett. Really, it's the only one I come up with. But anyway, and my own was the Paul E. Dangerously promo at the end of ECW. I believe it was the June 21st show. Seek that out. Because as I don't want to repeat lines because he delivered them far better than I could. But I ended that promo and went, I want to go and see this match. Like, I really need to see it. Sabu and Cactus Jack.
Well, Paulie's always been good on the mic, though, hasn't he?
Yeah, but this was a money home run promo. The entire, I didn't really comment much on it, but the entire build to that matchup was really good. Some of the promos from Cactus Jack were really good as well. And seek that out if you can. Anyway, that will bring to a conclusion a very long show. We go this long. Del Muir, thank you very much for joining us this week.
Not at all, mate. Pleasure.
You are on Twitter.
Ah, yeah, my name's got 7 letters in it, so if you're that bothered about finding me, I'm sure it'll not be difficult.
Which is where?
It's on Twitter at Del_Muir, DEL_MUIR, and same name on Facebook.
Colin.
Hello, yeah, I'm on Twitter. At Colin Judkins, not like previous, I've changed my Twitter handle, yay.
Yeah, you've got all boring.
It's not boring.
Is it not?
Is it the same
Colin Judkins banter, just under a different name?
I still have my screen name as Judders.
Okay.
But, it all boils down to a man who registered at C Judders. All one word. I've had C_Judders ever since I've been on Twitter. And I've tried talking to Twitter to say, look, this guy never posts. He last posted about 3-4 years ago. He's got about 3 tweets to his name. And I said, I want the C Judders. You know, I've got a little bit of an internet persona going on. It can help out. But no, they won't. So I said, sod it then. And then now I'm at Colin Judkins. ColinJudkins.
I would say the last 90 seconds is everything I hate about modern wrestling podcasts.
We should put one at the start next month. Yeah. Have a good wee 10-minute conversation.
Yeah, we'll start the next show, not with the news, not with the bit people came to listen to. We'll start next month's show talking about Twitter usernames. Yeah. But anyway, at Colin Judkins for you. I was setting you up in the hope you go 15 seconds. But anyway, you can follow the account. It's the no order. Follow the account at Wrestling20YRS. I am on Twitter for modern day wrestling stuff at Bobby Bamber. Wrestling20years.com for all the back episodes. We're on iTunes, RSS. If you'd rate us, review us, do whatever you like to do on that. Next month is the steroid trial. Now I'm hoping to have I think we will have a special show on it one way or another. Because that's going to be a big thing in itself. And we've also got Hogan and Flair and Bash at the Beach. So I think we're going to have 2 shows next month. Big time stuff indeed. But anyway, that'll be next month. Anyway, I've been Bob Bamber. This has been the June 1994 edition of the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. And until next time, goodbye.